Call to order the Business and Labor Committee, and a couple of items of business. Consistent with sort of the lightning speed of the session, we've decided to have an informational hearing on OLCC plans to do further expansion of provision of alcohol on Wednesday at our meeting. And we are sending out a notice to stakeholders to invite them to come and testify as well. And we'll just kind of, this is the beginning of some discussions about where we might be heading with this important topic. Second thing is that we will have then, since we will be taking Friday off, unless something comes up, and we always have to have that caveat, Monday and Wednesday will be the only days we have next week to work Senate bills. So just to know, we'll have to see how that comes together. And then today we will not be holding a potential work session on the two possible work session bills, House Bill 4142 or 4144. And now, that should we proceed to work session or to, what do you think? Do you want to just go ahead with
you're the chair, Mr. Chair, whatever you prefer.
We've got all but two. They'll probably be arriving soon. If you don't mind, let's go ahead and we'll do the work session first. Okay. So then, with that, we'll proceed to a work session on House Bill 4108.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we heard House Bill 4108 on the 6th. What this does is it establishes record-keeping requirements and other provisions for precious material secondhand dealers. During the public hearing, we discussed the Dash 4 amendment, which essentially gutted stuff but maintained the intent of the bill. It was discussed to have another amendment in front of us to address some of the concerns that were raised in the public hearing, which is the Dash 5. The Dash 5, the additions from the Dash 4 to the 5, it expands the definition of the item of precious metal to exclude electronic products or any part of mechanical system on motor vehicle, clarifies that the definition for the precious material secondhand dealer does not include a person that's primarily engaged in business or the internet who engages in commercial or industrial scrap metal recycling operations or a motor vehicle dispenser or a motor vehicle dealer that holds a certificate license under DMV statutes. And it also clarifies the provision in the Dash 4 with pertaining to pawnbrokers in which the Dash 5 prohibits a local jurisdiction to require a precious metal secondhand dealer that is also a licensed pawnbroker in Oregon to provide a photograph of an item of precious metal that is acquired through a transaction. The analysis came back with no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact on the Dash 5.
Okay. Are we prepared to
yes.
proceed?
We have all the paperwork ready to necessary to move the bill, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yeah, Mr.
We are in a work session.
We are in a work session, yes.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 4108 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
We have to adopt the amendment.
Yes, that's correct. We did not adopt we did not have the Dash 5 amendments with us during the public hearing.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment into House Bill 4108.
Okay. Co-Chair Garrett moves the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 4108. Is there any discussion? And my understanding is this is a comprehensive amendment. This has addressed the issues that have been brought forward. I see Representative Nathanson nodding and other parties, interested parties, nodding heads. Thank you very much. Anyone have issues at this point? Because this rapid session is a little concerning to this.
I have an issue, just a comment.
Yeah. What?
I don't have an issue, but just a comment.
A comment, so please.
Is this appropriate at this time?
Either on the amendment or on the passage of the bill?
Well, I think on the passage of the bill, it was very interesting, and maybe I just didn't notice it before, but the past 4 days in Oregonian, there have been 3 pages of full-page ads for buying and selling jewelry and so on, and I represent a little area called King City, which is an over 55 city, and in one of the storefronts, they've now opened a buy gold place.
Yep.
So I was going to go in there the other day and ask them about it, but they were closed. But it's just more, I think more and more of these are popping up, and there really do need to be some safeguards.
Is there an emergency clause on the bill?
No.
Maybe we'll do that in the Senate. Anything further? On the amendment at the moment. But.
Well, just to add to what Representative Daugherty said, because I don't believe that the right side should have all the commentary. So from the left over here, myself and Representative Johnson.
Is that one word, leftover?
Yes, leftover, yes. We had some friends over, one of whom is a police officer, and he said, listen, while you're up there, if there's just one thing you do this session, make sure that you pass that bill to, because right now what we have is people stealing jewelry and things and go in Lane County and going right down to Roseburg in Douglas County and selling these products because they have different laws, different regulations, and we can't track it and we can't get people's product back. And this is an excellent bill. And he mentioned Representative Nathanson's work and said, please, whatever you do, this would be a great aid for us to do our jobs.
Okay. Any further discussion?
We have the Dash 5 amendments before us. Is there any objection to adoption?
Seeing none, so ordered.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 4108 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Co-Chair Garrett moves House Bill 4108 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Nathanson is in the audience. Representative, would you like to carry this bill? Because I think a lot of us would love to have the credit for it. Congratulations. Nicely done. Okay. Thank you very much. And good luck. Our next and final item of business today is a work session on, is a public hearing. A public hearing on House Bill 4162. We'll open a hearing on House Bill 4162. Yes, staff?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 4162 extends civil rights protections to interns and volunteers in the workplace if they're performing work for educational purposes, whether or not the individual receives payment or any other form of compensation or benefit from the work. There's an emergency clause in the measure effective upon passage. And members, you do have two letters of support. And one is from Ellen Masterson, who is the Director of Field Education at the Portland State University School of Social Work, and also from the Chair and Vice Chair of the Oregon Commission for Women.
Okay, thank you very much. Please introduce yourself. Let's proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative, House District 50. Friends, we're gathered here today to attend a... No, I won't start that way. I don't want to make light of the situation in House Bill 4162. What I will say is I do appreciate the effort that's being made with BOLI. I want to give you a little bit of background on this bill, and I'll do so rather quickly in the interest of time, as we know lots of things are moving fast and some things aren't moving at all. This thing moved 6 feet under the other day, so I want to be clear that I appreciate at least having the conversation today, and thank you to both the chairs. We had learned about a problem about interns not receiving the same protections as employees, and in talking with Boley, who I think does a fabulous job with Kate Newhall in particular, working with my staff, Derek Bradley, we came up with a solution that we thought that we would extend the protections same as if they were an employee to the interns. Now, I understand that last session we tried to do so with interns and volunteers, and the language of volunteers became somewhat problematic. So we entered into this session with the expectation that perhaps we could get somewhere with ORS 659 and address the problem that exists with interns. I want to be clear. I'm a father of three daughters, all of which may not have any interest in politics. But then again, I didn't either. But the reality is, if my daughters are trying to further their education, trying to explore a new career, trying to work in a building where people deserve to be respected and treated fairly, then I think that they should follow the same provisions as if they were an employee. Just because you get paid doesn't mean that you have rights and access to justice. And so I also want to be clear that we have worked with, and I say worked with, the Association of Industries. I appreciate JL's efforts in working with us. Had some concerns raised by the school boards, and I understand that. But I don't take that concern as meaning no. What I take that concern to be is it's a conversation we can have. It's not necessarily one that's set up to be the tone of a 35-day session. And expanding an ORS such as 659 could create some problems and unintended consequence. So I'm here before you today again to thank you for your time and effort and the conversation on the matter, but to say that we don't take this matter lightly, and we've been looking at this from an angle of, do we provide protections in the field of harassment? Do we provide the protection in the field of discrimination? Do we provide protections at all? We had looked into drafting amendments. I wouldn't want to bring those forward to you because I don't think they're meaningful at this time. I think they each have their own problem, too. So at this point, I'd just like to say, in terms of context of the bill or the need for the bill, I think you may hear from Ms. Kate Newhall today. She's at least provided written testimony. And I do thank you for your time. And in light of time, I do say it's unfortunate we couldn't get this passed, but I'm also a very reasonable person. I'm not gaming this bill in any way. I'm not holding this bill hostage. I simply say if we can't provide protections today, I plan on working on this so that we can provide them come 2013. And again, I thank the co-chairs, I thank the entire committee, and your committee administrators for the time today. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions of Representative Matthews? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's bring up Kate Newhall, Mara Roche, and Sarah Jackson. Please give us your name, affiliation. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kinnemer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall. I'm with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We're here today to testify in support of House Bill 4162, which, as Representative Matthews said, would extend the same civil rights protections against discrimination and sexual harassment that already exist for employees to also protect interns working in the workplace. As you know, BOLI is the agency that's responsible for the enforcement of the state's civil rights laws, and as such, we feel strongly that interns should be treated with respect and afforded the same protections as other employees working in the workplace. We did testify on this bill last session. It was a concept that was slightly different because, as the representative said, it did include volunteers, but it was a concept that was widely supported by our Civil Rights Council, and that's a council that exists to advise the commissioner and the state generally on issues of civil rights enforcement and administration. And this was a concept that they, quite frankly, were floored to learn wasn't laws that already existed to protect our interns out there against, like I said, discrimination, sexual harassment. The bill has been crafted really carefully to only apply to those civil rights protections and not extend more broadly out into like workers' compensation or unemployment insurance. It's really just to make sure that interns have those same civil rights protections as employees. So the reason that they are not currently protected is our statutes in Oregon speak entirely for protections for employees. So because there is not this employment relationship between an intern and their employer, none of the civil rights protections that exist in state statute or in Title VII Civil Rights Act extend to those interns because they have not been found to be technically employees. There is, however, our federal counterparts, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has issued guidelines that in some circumstances, if an intern or a volunteer is in a situation or an environment that regularly leads to employment, could be considered to have that employment relationship. But again, it's not a protection for every intern that way. So just to give you a little bit of the technical overview of what 4162 does, it amends the existing definition of employer in our state laws so that individuals who are performing work for educational purposes are considered to be in that employment relationship and covered by those civil rights protections. So with that, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to testify on 4162. We think that this is a common sense protection for interns who, like every employee in Oregon, should be able to enjoy a workplace that's free from harassment and free from discrimination. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Representative Conger.
So, Kate, just a couple of questions. I was looking at your handout, and it says the division currently in your civil rights laws enforcement, you field an average of 25,000 to 30,000 inquiries per year and investigate approximately 2,200 cases per year. So more than 9 out of 10 of the inquiries that you get don't lead to an investigation. Out of the 2,200 cases you handle per year, how many result in a sanction?
Thank you, Representative Conger, members of the committee. So the 25 to 30,000 inquiries that the agency gets every year are sometimes folks that feel like they may be facing a situation where their civil rights laws are about to be violated. So someone might call in just to get a better understanding of what their rights are under. One of the ones that we field a lot of questions for employees is the Family Leave Act. So they can ask us questions prior to getting into a situation. We can help field and make them help them understand what their rights are. Sometimes folks decide after having a conversation that for whatever reason, yes, discrimination may have happened to them, but it's not a case that they want to go forward with and pursue. And a lot of times we help folks understand. One of the most effective ones that I've been able to do on the phone with people when they talk to me is sometimes an employer isn't necessarily aware of the law. And so it's a simple fact of educating the employee and then suggesting that maybe they want to do a printout of our FAQ and take it to their employer, and that can avoid the whole situation from even happening in the first place. So out of the 22, out of the cases that we investigate, and I'm just going to give you a really general statistic that I, for all of our civil rights cases, about 90% of the cases that we investigate are actually found on behalf of the respondent. So we find discrimination in about 10% of the cases that we investigate. One of the things that I, one of the downsides, I guess, of being an enforcement agency is that in every single decision that we make, somebody is unhappy with the decision at the end of it. One of the things that I say to complainants who are calling and unhappy that we didn't find discrimination in their cases, it doesn't necessarily mean that something horrible didn't happen or that it wasn't an unfair situation. It means simply that we couldn't find the substantial evidence of discrimination to prove it.
Can I follow up?
Follow up, please, Representative Conger.
Thank you. So I appreciate that. That kind of frames the scope of BOLI's engagement, I guess, is why I asked the question. Yeah, there are a lot of inquiries, some of which are inquiries that you route off into a non-adversarial, which I think is a great outcome. Out of the ones that you don't, that you end up actually investigating, opening a file and investigating, we come down to about 220 where you find actual discrimination. My second question is, I got to start with a statement. I mean, I think it's obvious that no one would want there to be a situation where an intern was harassed or discriminated against. But we're not answering the question of is it a good thing or a bad thing. We're looking at creating an expansion of the law, and I think it's important to look at what the results might be. And my question, this isn't really, I don't know, it's a question, I'm looking for a response, but my question is, statement, I'm struggling to try to describe it. My statement is, I understood civil rights laws to be protecting employees primarily because of the power of the relationship between the employer and the employee. So if a person who is discriminating against an employee is responsible for their livelihood, so they can terminate them from their job and they could lose their house or they could not be able to support their family or something, they're in a relationship where that person has a lot of power over their lives. And so our interest in protecting that person from a bad actor, the few bad actors, the 220 where you find discrimination, is pretty substantial. But it's because of the power that that person has over them. When I look at interns, I'm not sure that that's the case. And again, I predicate it all by saying nobody wants or thinks it's right that someone would harass or discriminate against an intern. I can't imagine why you would have an intern and then discriminate against them or harass them. It defies logic. But so how do you respond to that? The intern is not in that kind of relationship. They can go volunteer somewhere else. They can go intern somewhere else. They're not, their life, their livelihood, their income doesn't depend on this person who may be treating them badly.
Thank you, Representative Conger, members of the committee. I think that actually is a very good point, and I would argue that I think interns are a particularly vulnerable population, and more as we look around at the careers around us, do require some sort of experience on the ground. And I think, you know, I look back on my internships, I don't know that I would be able to be working in politics had I not had that sort of experience. So I guess I would look to interns. You're right, their livelihood does not depend on it, but I think the experience that they're getting is something that's absolutely critical to their future careers. And I think just because of the population that they are, they're younger, may not be as informed on their rights, I think that the need to protect that population is just as great as with employees.
One more
follow-up,
but and this is more of just a statement. I think it's a good answer, and it deserves discussion and consideration, but I do think we have to be careful, because the line you're testing is that power relationship, and if, you know, somebody having a significant amount of leverage over your life to the point where they can kind of force you to stay in a relationship that you don't want to be in, and, you know, if I walk down the street and somebody calls me a name, I may not like it, I may not think it's justified, but they're not committing a civil rights violation by doing so. And that's because, much as I don't think it's appropriate that I get called a name, I'm capable of just turning around and walking away. And so somewhere between the desire to see something wrong not happen and using the very big blunt club of the law to prevent it, I think we, you know, there's a significant amount of two-way risk there, I guess, is what I would say. So anyway, I appreciate your responses, Kate.
Okay. Representative Doherty?
Another question, kind of clarification. In the bully anti-discrimination, is there a difference between discrimination and harassment? And I'm thinking of workplace harassment, sexual harassment.
Thanks, Representative Doherty. Members of the committee, in civil rights law, sexual harassment is a form of gender discrimination.
Okay.
And there's a substantial body of case law around exactly what constitutes sexual harassment. But in our civil rights statutes, it's gender discrimination.
Okay, thank you.
And our
thank you. Any further questions, Representative Hoyle, please?
I think the point that Representative Conger brought up is important, and having been an intern in a different state house over 25 years ago, I can tell you that the difference between then and now is that there were more jobs that were available, and right now with my daughter doing internships, my son going to do internships, this is the difference. A good recommendation is the difference between them getting a job in the industry that they're working for and not getting a job. The other thing is that young people who don't have the same kind of experience, background, and quite frankly, self-confidence to understand that if there is someone in a management position, which, you know, I manage interns in my office, my legislative aide manages interns in my office, I think there really is a power differential, and it can be abused, and you have a young person who, again, is trying to get this experience to differentiate themselves between the thousands of other people who are looking for jobs, and there's a potential for abuse. Not that it would happen, but the fact that it could happen specifically because there is a power differential between that intern, which is the most entry-level position, not paid, volunteer, is the difference between them having a good resume, not a good resume, entrance into a certain particular field of experience. I believe they do deserve protection, and I may be a little more sensitive because I have a daughter specifically, you know, out in that kind of workforce, but I would say just because they're not paid doesn't mean that there isn't the opportunity for the same kind of abuse to happen. In fact, if not, more so. Because they do get taken for granted. So I do understand what you're saying, and I think we do have to be careful about putting things in statutes. But when people are showing up to work, paid or not, there's a value to that, and they do deserve protection.
Further questions or comments? Thank you. All right.
Chair Kenemer, Chair Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Maura Roach. I'm here today on behalf of the National Association of Social Workers, and we support this bill. All master's level social workers must have an internship placement as part of their educational process in order to graduate. And today I have with me Sarah Jackson, who is the student representative from PSU to the NASW board. And she's going to be providing testimony from Professor Masterson, who is the field placement coordinator. Before I turn it over to her, I would just like to share one experience myself as someone who receives interns from this program. Midway through a placement with a particular intern, there was a misfire in terms of the match for that intern, and I was called by PSU to see if I could take him for the remainder of his internship, which I did. But in that case, if he hadn't been able to complete his internship with me and get his hours, he would have had to delay his graduation and pay for another term of school. Mm-hmm. So I think there are some internships where, even though it's not a livelihood issue, there is actually a significant cost to being in a situation where you're unable to finish your internship. And I think that, you know, we need to keep that in mind, because different education programs are structured differently. And in the case of social workers, it is a requirement for them. So with that, I will turn it over to Sarah, who is here to testify for the first time on a bill, and let her take it away.
Chair Kenemer, Chair Garrett, and members of the committee, as Maura said, my name is Sarah, and I'm a student in the Graduate School of Social Work at Portland State. I'm also the student board member to the NASW of Oregon, which is a professional association for 1,800 social workers in this state. In addition, I'm in my second year, which means I'm in my second year of internship as well. I'm here today to present the testimony of one of my professors, Ellen Masterson, who is the Director of Field Education at PSU School of Social Work. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. NASW strongly supports House Bill 4162 because it extends the same workplace sexual harassment protections to interns that are available to other workers. In my position at PSU, I provide support and consultation to students about a wide range of situations they encounter in their internships. Sadly, I have had numerous examples of problems with sexual harassment of students over the years, but I'd like to share one example today that is relevant to the bill being considered. For obvious reasons, the situation will be presented in a way that protects the identity and confidentiality of those involved. An agency employee made unwanted and repeated attempts to socialize with a student during work as well as non-work hours. This included leaving multiple messages on the student's cell phone and email accounts and interrupting the student internship work to discuss the employee's attraction to the intern. The employee referred to their own power over the student in encouraging the student to accept social invitations. The student, not wanting to make a difficult situation worse, initially tried to ignore and minimize the unwanted advances. Eventually, the student discussed it with the faculty advisor, who supported the student to share the concern with their agency supervisor. The school's field office intervened to modify the student's placement and spoke directly with the agency employee about this concern. Field education is considered the signature training of social work education, and it is an integral part of every social worker's education. Social work students provide a significant level of service to vulnerable populations in Oregon. Approximately 460 PSU social work students are doing internships this year, providing services with a monetary value of approximately $3.5 million in areas including addiction, child welfare, mental health, criminal justice, developmental disabilities, domestic violence, family service, health care, homelessness, housing, schools, and services to immigrants, refugees, older adults, and veterans. The PSU School of Social Work is one of many educational institutions that require internships as a significant component of preparation for professional practice. None of these programs wants its students to be vulnerable to workplace harassment. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 4162. Again, this is an important bill, and the National Association of Social Workers asks you to support it. Thank you.
Any questions, comments?
And my understanding is the letter's already been submitted to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next panel, Roger Williams and J.L. Wilson, please. And this is the total of those who've signed up. Anybody else wishing to speak on this matter? Okay, please.
Mr. Williams?
Co-chairs, committee. For the record, my name is Roger Williams. I'm from Portland. And I, she's passing out the written testimony. I have several concerns about HB 4162 as drafted. First, the wording is ambiguous. Performing work for educational purposes could mean either for educating others or for educating oneself. My understanding is that the intent of the bill is to cover interns. Let's say what we mean plainly, not ambiguously. Second, the reach of this bill is too broad, covering many more people than interns. The commonly understood definition of an intern is an advanced student or graduate, usually in a professional field, gaining supervised practical experience. Just call them interns in the bill. People understand what an intern is. Third, the bill tries to graft interns onto the legal definition of employees. It's confusing. Nobody believes interns have the same standing as employees. Go ahead and refer to prior protection language, but don't call them employees. Keep them separate. Fourth, the bill short-circuits the distinction between employees and independent contractors. Fifth, this bill covers mom-and-pop shops who would not think in terms of interns. It covers a father teaching his son a trade. Instead, you should limit the bill's scope to those organizations large enough to have an actual intern program. My daughter teaches art at a private school where the students come for one day a week to take enrichment classes. She has a class this term which she has limited to only 6 students, and the students must be taking the class for the first time because she wants to give them students a chance. That's a very popular class. She gives individual instruction during the class, and a prior student wanted to take it again so he could learn even more. She allowed him in on the condition that he would be a teaching assistant. He would be considered an employee under this bill, the wording of this bill. He would be the only employee at the school since all staff members are treated as independent contractors. I ask you, does that make sense? Please send this bill back for rework.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Thank you for your written testimony. That specifics, appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Mr. Wilson?
Yeah, thank you, co-chairs and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We would not support House Bill 4162 as is, but I wanted to make clear to the sponsors, I've had running conversations with him in advance of this, that we would support or work in good faith on a concept narrowly applied to sexual harassment. Because I think that when I hear two themes emerging on this bill, one is discrimination in the terms and conditions of employment, which is what you allude to with all the 659A statutes, and the other I hear very clearly in the previous testimony, a clear focus on sexual harassment, which I think is a place where we could find some agreement. So I want to make clear our focus and our commitment to working on that concept if it meets the sponsor satisfaction. Just to give some background on our take on this issue, I'm just going to have two quick points. First of all, employers don't have to have internship programs. By definition, by Boley's definition, internship programs are for the intern. They are not for the benefit of the employer. Definitionally, here in the 2012 Boley Handbook, to be an intern, you have to meet a 6-point test, and you have to meet all 6 points. The training, even though it includes actual operation of the facilities of the employer, is similar to that which would be given a vocational school. That's point one. Point two, the training is for the benefit of the trainee or the student. Point three, the trainee or student does not displace regular employees, but works under close supervision of them. Point four, The employer that provides the training receives no immediate advantage from the activities of the trainee or student, and on occasion, the employer's operations may even be impeded. Point five, the trainees or students are not necessarily entitled to a job at the conclusion of the training period. And point six, the employer and the trainees or students understand that the trainees or students are not entitled to wages for the time spent in training. The point here is internship programs are not necessarily for the employer. In fact, it is acknowledged they impede the employer's operation. What this bill does is it essentially makes the employer incur liability on a range of discrimination issues alluded to in 659A for something in which the employer receives no immediate benefit. And I think that if you want to see fewer interns and fewer opportunities, this is exactly what you'll do, is make employers incur those liabilities. So I don't think that that's a good place to go. The second, which Kate alluded to in her testimony, regards where the EEOC is going on this particular issue. And in a general advice outline at the end of 2011, they conclude that an intern who receives only some small benefit that is an inconsequential incident of an otherwise gratuitous relationship cannot be considered an employee and is in fact not covered by EEOC protections. They go on to say that this inconsequential benefit includes things like learning credits and educational attainment, things like that. My point here is, and there's actually, there could be room for an easy out, because Kate also alluded to the fact that the EEOC said in certain circumstances these folks would be considered employees under the jurisdiction of the EEOC. You might think about a way just to make it consistent. I mean, one of the things that AOI has always harped on is making federal law consistent with state law, so there's an easy crossover application, and employers know that when I'm complying with federal law, I'm in compliance with state law. And if it's an issue of finding where in EEOC's jurisdiction that employees or interns are considered employees, then we in fact might consider statutory work that just makes Oregon's laws consistent with EEOC protections in those cases, and seems to be a path of least resistance on there. But just to reiterate our point again, we would support and work in good faith on a proposal that talked about sexual harassment, because in the end, that's not defensible.
Representative Poyle, please.
Mr. Wilson. Did you want to introduce the person you brought with you? Did you bring someone with you today?
My boss, of
introducing?
Yeah. The girl there in the pink is my daughter, Abigail. She's 11. She likes to check out what I do, and as you can see, she's sitting in rapt attention.
Remarkably rapt for her age, frankly.
Yeah.
Nice to have you with us. Thank you. Okay, any further? Yes, Representative Johnson.
Just one question. Thanks, Mr. Chair. JL, is it clear to you whether this bill as written would apply strictly to volunteers or interns, or could they be viewed interchangeably? I guess I look at perhaps oftentimes people volunteer to gain a little knowledge about a particular area or something that could then be a segue into an internship later on if they have a favorable view and favorable experience and so forth. So I'm just wondering what your perception of that could be.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson, members. The biggest criticism that I heard at the very outset of the bill, and of course this bill was just a starting point, so I understood that, you know, it's going to be an imperfect vehicle, but an individual performing work for educational purposes is broad and has a number of meanings.
True.
And could be reasonably construed to include that hypothetical that you give. So yes, narrowing that down will be, you know, a big deal.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or comments?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing no one else to testify,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Before you go, out,
please.
Thank you, sir. I want to thank the committee again for your attentiveness on the subject. I think it's important. I want to thank the testimonies that we heard on both sides, and I want to make sure that they were clear too. And I appreciate the Association of Oregon Industries. They could have easily taken a knee-jerk approach to this and said no right from the start, and he didn't do that. JL's been good to work with and letting us know kind of his position. He has sought out solutions, and I think we're going to be working on that in the interim, which I really appreciate. Okay. But before we close out, I just really want to give recognition to to recognize our staff, the people that work with us in our offices. Mine in particular is Derek Bradley. He's sitting out there right now, but he has put a tremendous amount of effort during the interim into a couple of bills that we believe deeply in this office, and it's been unfortunate. I haven't delivered, or we haven't delivered, but I think as we joke about bills being dead and as we look at some folks holding things hostage, we need to remember that we sit here as a result of some great work for some great people, and out of my office is Derek Bradley. So I just want to say thanks to Derek for the great work. Appreciate that, and thanks to all the folks out there that make us as effective as we are, or perhaps should be. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Seeing that, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 4162, and we've completed our business for the day. We are adjourned.